Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast, which is about the Doom Patrol comic published by DC Comics, and we're talking about it a lot.
Just a bit, yes. Hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can reach us on waitingfordoom@gmail.com or on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. You can also make contact via mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, which is run by our fellow Doom bro, Doug Zavisha. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com.
Hello, I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks. And we also have a sentient show Twitter account, which is Wilfred at WFT Pod, and we are sponsored by Comicosity, the site for comic stuff.
Oh yeah, like they love comics. Oh yeah, I noticed this past week they've got a nice little hype piece all about the upcoming Mr. Miracle series from DC Comics.
Oh, doesn't that look cool?
Oh, written by Tom King and art by Mitch Gerard, and cover, I don't know if it's just the first cover or all the covers are being done by Nick Darrington.
I think it is possibly the opening arc covers will be Nick
Okay, because that's a very cool one with Mr. Miracle completely chained and shackled on a stage before an audience, and it looks brilliant.
Yeah. But now, yeah, before we go any further, Mike, you've got a sexy voice this week.
This week? How dare you? Yes, that's right. I'm suffering from a cold. I don't know if it's just because it's this time of year and public transport is full of sick people, or my defense systems are not used to the new germs at my new job. So yeah, yay me. 1 week into the new job and I'm already sick. That's going to look really good. So yes, hello and welcome to the late edition of the news. So look, you know, if people like the deep, sexy voice, Mike, I'll try and stay sick longer. I don't know how that'll work out. But yes, I'm a bit under the weather, but this is what we do for the fans, Paul. We just soldier on. We bring the good stuff to the fans or something.
We always soldier on no matter what, unless we feel like stopping.
Yes. It's very noble of us. And you're welcome, Internet. You are welcome.
Do it for you.
Oh, yeah. I do it for you.
God, anyway, Mike. Mike, I believe you're sick at home. Have you been reading any comics?
Apparently being sick at home is the only way I get to catch up on all my comics. I did venture out to Free Comic Book Day last weekend. Got some good stuff from there. Got the Doctor Who book from Titan Comics. The Tick by New England Comics Press. I haven't read The Tick for years. The 2000 AD book. One from Drawn and Quarterly called Colorful Monsters, which was kind of whimsical, and I mainly got that because it had Moomins in there. Do you know who the Moomins are, Paul?
I do remember the Moomins. They're sort of a bit like hippopotamus people, aren't they?
Yes, yes. Written and drawn by Tove Jansson back in the 50s, I think it was. I've always loved her art style, and Drawn and Quarterly does comics based on those. So yeah, that's really cool. But catching up on the rest of my to-read pile, I caught up on some Lazarus, some Paybacks, a bit of Saga, some Sex Criminals, and finally the second last issue of The Mighty Zodiac, written by previous show guest Jay Torres.
The kids one.
Yeah, that only came out last August, so you know, I'm finally getting on top of the pile. So, but yeah, it was good to catch up on some comics. What about you, Paul? What have you been up to?
I went to a Comic Gong, which is the Wollongong Comic Con, which was down in Wollongong. So my daughter, she does the art. I've mentioned this before, and makes badges and key rings and things like that, mm-hmm. and prints. So of anime stuff. So she had a table book there. So I was support dad. Yep. But went down. It was really good. Yeah, it was a good little show. It got a really good buzz, and it's, you know, some cons sort of die after lunch. This one picks up. It's weird.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so she had a very good day selling stuff. And I was able to catch up with a couple of Canberra comic creators. So I saw Tim Styles, Big Tim.
Big Tim.
Yeah, he was there, and he was pushing Cthulhu Williams. And he's, for those of you who don't know, Gorilla My Dreams, that's his webcomic, which is free and it's fabulous. So every 2 weeks there's a new page of that, and that's really worth a look. So just Google Gorilla My Dreams at Mac Jeeves, I think it is. And, yeah, and I also caught up with Ryan K. Lindsay, who's the other comic writer. He was... I got a kids comic from him called Air, E-R-E-I-R,
right,
which is very cool. So he does beautifully produced books, and yeah, so people to watch.
Cool.
Yeah, so that was fun.
Good stuff.
It's the fraternity of comic bros. A bit.
The Canberra Comic Collective, oh yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, shall we go down on Darrington Way?
Yes, please. Sorry, that sounded far too sexy.
So this week, there's not too much coming out of the Darrington Way camp. As you said, Nick Darrington is doing the covers for the Mr. Miracle series by Tom King, which will be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the Doom Patrol first trade is about to be released, so... We've seen a couple of pictures on the net of what it looks like, and it looks like the promo art with all the characters sort of gathered around the ambulance has been retasked to be the trade cover. And we do know that it has a afterword by Gerard Way.
Cool.
So he was able to twist his own arm to write something for his own.
he had a good talk to himself about contributing. Yeah.
So this will be coming out, I think it's the end of May, very end of May that week. Looking forward to that, and I think hopefully there'll be some nice extras in it, some, you know, preliminary sketches and all that sort of stuff.
Hopefully all the variant covers are collected in there too. That'll be cool to see.
I think they always do collect the variant covers, so that's assured, but hopefully there'll be some sexy back matter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Can't get away from the sexiness.
No, we can't.
Yeah. Anyway, do I hear ticking now?
We can, and it can only be the Doom Clock. So yes, looking at the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that the last Doom Patrol book we had came out a mere 3 weeks ago. That's pretty good compared to other times. Yes, issue 6 of volume 6, which we covered back in episode 92, where we saw the Vectra's plans for more Danny Burgers destroyed and the patrol reunited for the most part at this stage. issue 7 of volume 6 is due July 26, only 10 weeks away. Mark your calendars, gang. Get ready for that one. But this week in Doom Patrol history, going on sale for a mere 12 cents on May the 16th of 1968, with a cover date of July-August of that year, was Doom Patrol 120 from Volume 1 by Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani. This issue was titled The Rage of the Wrecker, and it saw the Chief make use of three different robot bodies. Do you remember them, Paul?
I do, yes.
Yes, the rocket robot, the grasshopper robot, and some flamethrower tank robot thing.
Yeah.
So yes, we had multiple versions of the Chief joining Negative Man in space to take out the evil Wrecker. And meanwhile, back on Earth, Mento and Elastigirl were enjoying a night out on the town, and they accidentally ran into Beast Boy and his girlfriend Jillian Jackson at a discotheque, and of course, a fight broke out. Ah, the 1960s.
I think you meant to say Cliff was in space, not Chief. But anyway.
I thought the Chief had joined... No, because didn't the Wrecker knock out Cliff?
No, his body got wrecked and they put his brain in the other robots.
Oh, that's what it was. Look, I'm sick. Let's put it down to that. I'm sick, but I sound sexy, so it's win some, lose some.
Sounds more win to me, matey.
But look, anyway, to clear it all up, people should go and listen to episode 79 of Waiting for Doom, which we released back in December of 2016, because that'll have all the details. And it'll correct my mistakes. And we covered issue 120 and 119 in that episode. So go and check that out for more. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Andy, I have an amazing idea. Let's do a podcast.
We've been talking about doing this for years. That sounds great. So, what should we talk about?
Something no one else is talking about. Batman.
Mike, there are hundreds of Batman shows out there. You used to do one.
True. Well, maybe we could do an index show.
Are you insane? We both already host those.
True again. Okay, maybe we could talk about Batman stories no one else does. Like the Jerry Conway run.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, we could discuss his entire run and then go into the Doug Mensch run.
But we won't be tied down to that. We need to be free to talk about other Batman stories from that era as well.
And we could call it the Overlooked Dark Knight, the non-index index show.
Great!
I guess we should do a trailer.
I think we kind of just did.
Yeah, but it's missing something. Like, you should have added music behind us or something.
Andy, I have an amazing idea. Let's do a podcast.
We've been talking about doing this for years. That sounds great! So, what should we talk about?
Something no one else is talking about. Batman.
Mike, there are hundreds of Batman shows out there. You used to do one.
True. Well, maybe we could do an index show.
Are you insane? We both already host those.
True again. Okay, maybe we could talk about Batman stories no one else does. Like the Jerry Conway run.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, we could discuss his entire run and then go into the Doug Mensch run.
But we won't be tied down to that. We need to be free to talk about other Batman stories from that era as well.
And we could call it the Overlooked Dark Knight, the non-index index show.
Great!
The Overlooked Dark Knight, the non-index index show. New episodes drop on the 14th and 28th of every month. The show and the website, www.overlookeddarknight.com, launch in May of 2017 from the Fortress of Baileytude Podcasting Network.
And now it's time for Doomsplaining, the part of the show where we talk about the Doom Patrol some more, as opposed to the earlier parts of the show.
Finally, thank goodness.
Yeah, about time they talked about the Doom Patrol. And this week we are talking about the Rachel Pollack run of the Doom Patrol. So we're continuing our coverage of this series. Tonight we're covering issue 68 and 69. And I know I said tonight, it could be any time you're listening, so I'll just clarify that. Yeah. But yeah. So issue 68, which was a DC comic on the Vertigo imprint. It was cover dated July 1993, but actually came out on the 1st of June 1993. Mm. And it cost $1.95 back then, and that's in US dollars. And it was edited by Tom Payer. Or Pyre, depending on that. Anyway, it's written by Rachel Pollack, and the pencils are by Linda Medley. The inks are by Graham Higgins. The letters are by the John E. Workman Jr. Man, as we call him. And the colors were by Stuart Chaffetz. And it has one of those cool sculpture covers by Tom Taggart, which shows a character called the Master Cleaner, who is a bit of a freak dude, isn't he? He's a man who has a baby in a globe for a head.
Yes. Yes.
This one looks a little bit, Independence Day when they crack open the aliens and you see.
Ah, yes, yes.
A bit like that, isn't it?
A little bit like that. Good call. Yeah.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah. And he has a gun called the Little Squirt.
Little Squirt for a little baby-headed man.
Yeah.
It's a bit weird. And the big canister he's got has cleaning fluid written on it as well.
Yep, sure does.
So it's a bit weird.
It is a bit weird. Anyway, let's get into it. So the issue opens and a hipster sits reading to his girlfriend in the street. Suddenly his book is replaced with a piece of paper with the word book written on it. He turns to Karen, but she is gone, replaced by a piece of paper cut in the shape of a woman with woman written on it. He runs through the street babbling as all around him people and objects are substituted for paper with written labels. He runs into the police station where the desk sergeant sits, but the cop is gone in an instant as a bloody red portal opens close by it and the word cop appears on a piece of paper. And then hands reach through these portals around him, and he says, "I told the baby I'm not dirty." And he shrieks as three yellow blobby beings grab him and pull him into the red fleshy tunnel portal. And inside, it's all red. Everything is red, and the walls look like they're made of gross flesh. And they remove his clothes and burn them. And then he's hung on a hook, and the baby-headed being that's on the cover of the issue sprays him with cleaning yellow fluid. Oh, dear.
Mm. Mm. Not a good start.
Yeah. Well, these things happen.
Yeah, true.
In the Doom Patrol. Anyway, in Rainbow Estates, which is where the Doom Patrol's made their new base, Dorothy is cutting and dyeing Niles' hair red. So the chief is getting his red hair back. I did notice in the previous issue he had grey hair, which I thought was weird.
Mm.
But Cliff is still complaining, like the last issue. And the chief has told him that the Doom Patrol is reforming, but no one is even on monitor duty. Niles dismissively tells Cliff that the sexually remainded spirits, the sexy ghosts who died in sexual adventures or misadventures, they will take over monitoring the world for Doom Patrol appropriate threats. Meanwhile, there's another meanwhile. A dandy dressed like a fox, or possibly a fox dressed like a dandy, is sprinkling powder on the ground. He's excited by the Doom Patrol being new residents in the area. He casually kills a passing raven and creates butterflies from its body.
Right.
Yeah.
As you do.
As you do.
Yeah.
Anyway, Cliff is still freaked out by the SRS, the sexually remaindered spirits, being in charge of monitor duty, but he's willing to work with them to get it up and running. So the two bandaged ghosts, George and Marion, they show him the 900-number call center run by dozens of bandaged spirits. So they provide psychic and sex chat lines, as well as a steady stream of income for the Doom Patrol. He also meets a new bandaged woman, the gorgeous writer, who talks in strange sentences. Meanwhile, a man sits in an apartment having a conversation with the decorative magnets on his fridge. They want him back in action, embracing his power. What's stopping him? A flower magnet asks. And he says, the 12 steps of Superheroes Anonymous. And the conversation is ended when the fridge is suddenly replaced with a large piece of paper with fridge written on it. And a portal opens around him and yellow arms reach for him. He pulls off his human form like a snakeskin, revealing a being made of envelopes. Junk mail, he's identified as. And he blasts letters at the outreaching arms. And he also profiles some of his other identities. The character All Tied Up, the power to overwhelm enemies with appointments, the bad joke, agonizing opponents with puns, mother-in-law stories and ethnic slurs, the candle burning at both ends, exhausting enemies with the tantalizing possibilities, and Help from Switzerland, the power to make everyone conventional and boring. So, I won't describe these people yet. We will come back to that.
Yes.
Cliff is outraged that the team are funded by sex chat lines, but that's cut short by Dorothy fetching him for the chief. His milkshake has just been substituted for a piece of paper with the word milkshake written on it, and a bowl of cereal nearby, and a nearby clock. Suddenly, he is tossed off the bench by a portal opening. The three yellow beings are attacking, one wielding a spray gun, another a scythe, and the final one with a big wire brush. They're all slashing at Cliff, George, and Marion. Even Charlie the doll gets damaged. Dorothy hangs back, scared and reluctant, before she finally unleashes her imaginary friends, a black cloud shaped with teeth called Dark as the Morning, Pretty Miss Dot, who's the idealized superhero version of Dorothy, and Paddle the Sky, which is like a whirlwind with little paddles that it slaps. The yellow blobs are all driven back, but in the sex chat slash monitor room, they see that the yellow beings are wreaking havoc on people, buildings, and all manner of objects around the world. Suddenly, a bedraggled woman appears, dressed in a dress and apron, flanked by two floating heads, boys who won't stop crying and whining for mommy. The woman says it's the master cleaner. He wants to clean the whole world. The chief, irritated, asks her to stop the children crying, but she says she can't. They are part of her superpowers as the incompetent mother. Niles suggests that she should leave then if she can't stop the crying, but her solution is to peel off her skin to reveal a new superhero underneath, the visionary stomach. And he turns his tummy TV to them to show that the baby-headed master cleaner, surrounded by the hooked smoking corpses of people he has recently cleaned, is the threat. The end of the issue.
Now, I really like that one.
It's very. I thought it was very cool the way things were disappearing and being replaced by like marker bits of paper.
Yes,
and they look so dodgy. Like they're not even written nicely.
It's kind of weird in that. Yes, we're taking this stuff, but we're going to leave you a reminder what was there, but in a really slapdash manner.
Yes. Yeah. So. Yeah, but the Master Cleaner is. It's got like a robot body with some sort of smock on it with little pieces of paper pinned on. Mm-hmm. But when you get to the head, it's just this blue globe with a pink baby inside.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And the Master Cleaner's minions are sort of like these fat yellow, almost like chicken carcass people with eggs for heads.
Did you ever read a comic series called The Max?
The Sam Keith one?
Yes.
Yeah, I did it. Yeah.
Do you remember the funny little bulbous creatures and that, the is?
The things with teeth?
Yes.
Yeah, I do.
The yellow blobby guys in this remind me a little bit of the is. I mean, yes, they look different, but just these weird creatures that sort of appear out of nowhere and are just blobs. they remind me a little bit of those.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But yes, let's talk about the new friend that the patrol made.
Yeah, so this reminds, he's a dude who has lots and lots of different superhero powers.
Mm.
But he kind of reminds me of, are you familiar with the concept Dial H for Hero?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so that was a character who had a hero dial. He was just a regular like Robbie Reed. But when he dialed the hero dial and made the words hero on it, he would get a new superpower. And they never reused the same superpower. So, and people, this was in the 60s, people could write in and suggest superheroes. And they, if you won, your superhero would appear in the comic. Oh,
that would have been so cool.
Yeah. But Dial H has come back in a couple of forms, and most recently in the New 52, which is a very cool run. I think you enjoyed as well as me.
Oh, yes. I was a big fan of that run, yes. That was very cool. But yes, they don't actually name this character, but some of the promo material, he's identified as the Identity Addict.
Ah, right.
Which gets explained a little bit more in the next issue we're going to cover. But yes, he's never really given a name within the story itself. But yes, we'll learn a bit more about him in the next issue. But yeah, some of the powers some of the superheroic forms that he comes up with are just really weird but fitting for the Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
Just really like help from Switzerland.
Yes.
The power to make everyone conventional and boring, and like his head is like a mountaintop.
An Alp.
And he's got like a skirt with, you know, numbers and dollar bills all over it. And
yeah.
It's just
bizarre. Like all tied up, which is sort of like a bondage lady, but she's got a phone line wrapped all around her.
Yeah. And the first form that he changes into when the blobby people, who I'm calling the cleaners, when they first attack him, you know, when he transformed in this pile of junk mail and says, oh, of course, junk mail, the power to drown an enemy in fake sweepstakes and appeals for money. just that insanity of it all, it just cracked me up, but it's so cool.
Yeah. But Cliff is still whinging in this comic, isn't he?
Cliff's really unhappy with the patrol's current situation.
Yeah, but we have gone from the Doom Patrol having giant monitors to just lots of regular monitors and bandaged ghost people monitoring it.
Yeah.
And in amongst their other calls.
I don't know how he can begrudge them a source of income, even if it is from 900 sex lines.
And psychic and, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a whole mix. I love the room that's full of these bandaged people, and they're all talking about, you know, different stuff, and some of it's a little bit kinky, and others, are like, you know, they're giving Oracle-type readings to the customers at the end of the line. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, but George and Marion sort of take him over there. But in the last issue, George and Marion were dressed like a 1950s traditional couple, you know, with the pipe and everything. And in this, they're sort of in aerobic gear or like just been to the gym. And Marion's pretty pleasantly curvy, I would say.
Yeah, sure. If managed people are your thing, yeah. I don't know if I like George's ponytail. That's made out of bandages, though. Then again, it's very 90s. It's very of the time.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, they seem to have a physical body under the bandages, whereas in the last issue, they just seem to be, you know, ethereal underneath. Like you saw gaps in the bandages, but here you can see mouths in the bandages and underneath.
Yeah, and Dorothy's still... I don't know how I feel about Dorothy still being reluctant to use her powers. I mean, I guess she's still in shock after what happened with the Candlemaker, but she seems very wishy-washy on using it.
Mm.
Until, like, well, when Charlie gets damaged in the cleaner's attack, then she kind of freaks out and then releases, you know, Pretty Miss Dodd and Dark as the Morning and Paddle the Sky, which Paddle the Sky is just this bizarre... Yeah, it's like a tornado of hand-holding wooden paddles that are driving back the cleaner monsters. It's like this is peak insanity in this book. You know?
I really like that idea. I mean, those ideas, because they seem fresh and new, whereas a lot of the stuff that comes into this comic doesn't seem fresh. I mean, like butterflies. We've seen butterflies in, you know, previous arcs under Grant Morrison.
Mm.
We've seen bandaged people with Rebus, of course. Yeah. But, you know, I think Rachel Pollack is having a bit of fun with it. Like when the cleaners come through the portal, they're all saying different phrases. And one says, derive hidden meanings. And the other one says, from words. And the other one says, and phrases. You know, so she's kind of just making fun of the typical stuff that happens in a Grant Morrison comic where, yes. you know, yeah. people say things and we sit there pondering, oh, what do they mean by that? You know, whereas basically she's just coming out and saying, you know, this is nonsense and it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I mean, the other tribute to Grant Morrison is the character Gorgeous Writer, who, have you noticed everything she says, the first letter spells out Grant?
Oh, I was trying to figure that out. I hadn't realized that.
Oh, yeah.
I realized that everything she said starts with, like, the first word starts with G, the second letter starts with R. For some reason, my sick brain didn't look past that because I just saw Gorgeous Writer, GR. Oh, everything she says starts with GR. Oh, my goodness. I'll have to go back and reread the whole damn thing now.
Yeah, but I mean, Grant Morrison has said in his crazy interviews that he does that, you know, you can put on a fiction suit and enter your own fiction. I'm just wondering if the Gorgeous Writer is like an avatar for Rachel Pollack in her own comic.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. Because it's definitely female, whereas Grant Morrison is definitely male.
Yeah. I'm looking at the note the Gorgeous Writer gives George, and it says, yeah, gaze right at news televisions. And yeah, that spells Grant right there. Come on, Michael. Good grief.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I'm sick, but I sound sexy, so win lose. Well spotted, sir. Well spotted.
Mm. So, and... One thing that's exciting this week is they announced that there's going to be a trade of these issues coming next year.
How awesome was that news?
Yeah, so that looks like they're going to collect the entire run in two trades.
Yes, yes.
So that's we're going to get the first trade will be, what, 12 issues and the Vertigo Jam story?
I believe so, yes.
Which I better dig out, so, because I think I do have it somewhere.
I think I have it somewhere, maybe. I don't know.
I'm anyway.
Sick but sexy. Anyway.
Any last thoughts on this first issue?
No, I liked it. I think as we dive into the next issue, I really like this two-parter story. I think this is a really fun first part to it as well. And it's fun, but it's got that Doom Patrol weirdness. But it's got Pollack. I think Pollack's finding her feet a bit more as she goes along and definitely making her own stamp on it.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the way Cliff is characterized. And the fox guy in the woods doesn't thrill me with thrills, but I like the other stuff, and I really like the medley art and Graham Higgins on inks. They're doing a really good job, you know, making the book look different.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So that's very cool.
Cool.
All right. Do you want to take us into 69?
Let's get into 69. Doom Patrol 69. Sorry. Which has a cover date of August of 1993, but went on sale July 6th of that year for a mere $1.95 American. Edited by Tom Robert Payer, written by Rachel Pollack, pencils by Linda Medley, inks by Graham Higgins, letters by Johnny Workman Jr., and colours by Thomas J. Zwicko. And this one's called Down Among the Underpinnings. So we open the issue looking at the common room of the Violet Valley Retirement Home, where the residents are socializing with card games and chit-chat. one man discusses a newspaper article he's reading about a yuppie's complaints that old people are taking too much of the country's resources, a generational war between the different age groups. Another woman notices a large butterfly swarm outside the window, and someone opens that window, allowing all the butterflies into the room. The group begins to reminisce about the good old days of marching against the system when suddenly the suit-wearing fox man we saw in the previous issue bursts through the front door. "Comrades, I salute you," he says. "The spirit of the ages lives in the spirit of the aged." And as this fox man enters the room, the residents barrage him with questions about who he is and how he got past the guards. "Butterfly power, my darlings. The power to strike back at confinement, lethargy, and precipitous decline. The power of victory in the generational war." Before long, the fox has revealed a bag containing silver fox masks and double-headed axes designed to look like the world's deadliest butterflies. "Join me in battle, my friends. Tell the world the old foxes are fighting back. If the generations want a war, we'll give it to them. Strike for victory, comrades. Victory to the fox." The elderly residents raise their butterfly axes into the air and behind their silver fox masks repeat the call to arms. "Victory to the fox." That can't be good.
Oh.
Meanwhile, over at DPHQ, the visionary stomach is bringing the patrol up to speed on the mysterious events happening around the world. It's all due to a being called the Master Cleaner, as we've seen. It's his job to clean people's karma after they die, so they can go on to a new life. But because there are too many people in the world, he's decided to clean everything in the entire world all at once. While Niles scoffs at the mention of karma and such New Age babble, Cliff demands to know who the visionary stomach is. Just at that point, the visionary stomach transforms into a new being called the Unborn Peacock, a fleshy blob sparsely covered in peacock feathers and diamonds, with the power to dazzle enemies with visions of beauty. "Cut the crap," says Cliff. "Who are you really and why do you keep doing that?" Ah, whingy Cliff. The Peacock admits he was once an assistant working for the Master Cleaner, but he got caught in an accident and splashed with memories of people who fantasized about having superpowers. And now changing into those superpowers is his addiction, hence the name the Identity Addict. Suddenly, one of the monitor watchers alerts the team to the fact that Amsterdam is under attack. Niles thinks that this is the perfect chance for the new Doom Patrol to prove itself. And George and Marion are excited to help, as Amsterdam, it turns out, is their old hometown. Despite Dorothy's concerns about using her powers again and Cliff's anger over the current gathering of people not actually being any sort of team ready for battle, Niles has them all go down to the den to the teleporter. The Unborn Peacock joins the team at this time, transforming into a new being, the Compassionate Cop, who's, if you imagine, a bizarre police officer with crying eyes on his uniform and a bouquet of flowers for a head.
Right. All right.
And Niles warns them that they have to be back at the arrival point of the teleporter in exactly 7 hours, or they'll have to find another way home. And so the team walk through the glowing, swirling mass of the teleporter, briefly encountering different facets of the sexually remanded spirits, before reappearing in Amsterdam Square, which is fairly barren, save for the notes left behind in place of stolen objects and people. Suddenly the cleaners appear and attack the team. Compassionate Cop changes into the Better Mousetrap, ensnaring enemies in an unbreakable trap. George slaps the cleaner around with his bandages, saving Marion, just as Cliff catches a piece of falling roof to save nearby civilians. Dorothy unleashes Dark as the Morning, and the Better Mousetrap is now Death and Taxes, flooding an enemy with audit work paper. God. With the fight over, the team realizes that the entire royal palace is now gone, and a note's been left in its place. Cliff announces that they have to take the fight to the Master Cleaner, and the Identity Addict replies that they have to find an entrance created down to the underpinnings, and while he offers to change into something to fly them there, he mistakenly becomes someone called the Blackened Inadequacy, who is a small, meek-looking man covered in black stains, and he can't really do anything at all. Womp womp. Back at DPHQ, Gorgeous Rider has brought in Sam Schoonmaker, who is the mayor of Arm Valley, to see the chief. The mayor's concerned about the increasing attacks by the Wild Girls, and he's now also concerned about troubles at the old age home, where he's hoping the Doom Patrol can go and do something about all this madness. Niles takes a sip of his chocolate milkshake and tells him the patrol will consider what action to take when they return from their current mission. Speaking of which, our heroes are under attack again, as they are cornered by cleaners on a canal bridge. The pregnant Leaf, formerly the Blackened Inadequacy, is zapped and Pretty Misdot is cut so severely that Dorothy collapses in pain. The fight causes the bridge to collapse, and it's down under the water that the team discover an opening to the underpinnings in the riverbed. Walking through the hellish caverns, they find a room that resembles a dry cleaner store, but with bodies hanging under the clear plastic covers instead of clothing. And as they continue to explore, Dorothy decides to ask Cliff how he came back from Danny World, to which Cliff replies that, well, there's no place in paradise for a robot. And Dorothy persists and asks him, what about Jane? But Cliff shuts her down, saying he doesn't want to talk about it. Good timing, Dorothy. Yeah. Our heroes finally locate the Master Cleaner's control room, and another fight breaks out. Cliff is struck down by the Master Cleaner, and three Cleaner warriors are about to destroy George and Marion, when suddenly those three are fused into a statue by a figure with a paintbrush for a head and a paint-covered coat. Yes, the Identity Addict has somehow survived and has returned as the Masterpiece to save the day. God, I love the wordplay in this one.
Mm.
The Master Cleaner steps up to the Identity Addict, about to strike, saying, art too is filth. Just as the Masterpiece becomes a floating naked woman with water for hair cascading down her back. You must remember me, she pleads. You gave me my name, the false memory. She then continues to subdue the Master Cleaner by recalling events that never actually happened. Remember that time with the pigeons, the flakes of powder and the snow on their wings, or the day the trapeze broke, how we wept with joy when he caught her? How about when we drank champagne on the subway and shared our chocolate with the homeless, remember? The rest of the team, understandably, stand there in stunned silence as the false memory cradles the Master Cleaner's head. Well, the infant that makes his head is now asleep. She's cradling the Master Cleaner's head against her bosom, and she tells him, it's all right now. He'll go back to his regular duties, I promise. Behind me, you'll find a ramp to the surface world. Hurry back before it closes. And as the team starts to leave, Marion gives the false memory a kiss goodbye on the cheek, and the false memory says, goodbye, my friends. Remember me and all of our sweet years together. Remember me in the Doom Patrol. Remember. And that's the end of that issue and this crazy two-parter.
Wow.
What do you think of that one, Paul?
I love all the Master Cleaner action.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff of the old folks home, I guess, is setting up a next issue or another plot coming up.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I do like the Silver Fox concept, all these old people. And those axes that are, you know, the sort of battle axes that look like butterflies, they are quite an imaginative concept.
Yes, you may recall the crow woman we saw leading the Wild Girls. The her appearance and the dandy dressed fox, that will come to a head later.
Yeah.
In this run. But yeah, it's sort of future plot threads. But yeah, very nice. Cool.
I a little bit disappointed, but this is all solved by the Identity Addict who, you know, joined the team, you know, basically wandered into the team last issue just to be here to solve the problem at the end for them. So structurally, you know, it's not, you know, we'll just introduce a character who can solve everything just in time.
Yeah, and I don't think, I can't recall ever seeing the Identity Addict ever again after this story.
Yeah. But it's interesting. I mean, the sort of the new Doom Patrol's taking shape in this, where you got George and Marion out on the mission with Dorothy and Cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much Dorothy's imaginary friends. They're almost like members of the team now, like what's it called? The Hanger or the Coat Hanger Man?
Oh, Jolly Hanger, yes.
Jolly Hanger, yeah. He comes back. He got blasted before in a previous issue. I thought he was gone, but he's okay.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and Charlie. Charlie's on the mission too.
Yeah, they're a really weird team now, aren't they?
They are very weird.
I mean, yeah, they've been weird before, but now they've got, like, a talking doll and two bandaged people and, you know, the head of the Doom Patrol is literally the head of the Doom Patrol.
Yeah. And Cliff's jacket, he's with the big shoulder pads, that goes up in flames in this. So
yeah,
new outfit. Is that a big deal coming up? Or?
Well, I think in a way it might be... Because, yeah, it gets burnt in one of the caverns in the underpinnings when some lava drops on it. I wonder if that's almost Rachel Pollack's way, sort of of saying goodbye to another thing from Grant Morrison's run.
Yeah, perhaps.
Mm.
Yeah, but I mean, I like these stories more than the opening arc we got under Reg Pollock.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's stronger stuff and it seems to have its own identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I did like the character of the identity addict as a concept. Very goofy DC, but done in a Vertigo way.
Yeah, almost reminiscent in a way of Jane and how she's always got different powers. But again, as you said, he's sort of introduced and then used to save the day and that's it.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Like, oh, okay, he could have been really handy to keep around, but hey, I guess he saved the world, you know, as a false memory, so good for him.
Mm. And we get another sculpture cover from Mr. Tom Taggart.
Yes. We've got the butterfly on, it has to be Robot Man's hand. We've got a portrait of a fox, and we've got skeletons hanging underneath in the underpinnings.
Hmm. That's all the elements.
Mm.
Yeah. Any last thoughts on these?
It's a nice little two-parter. It, as you said, it's stronger than Rachel's first story arc. And again, I think she's definitely becoming more comfortable with doing her own thing with the patrol now that she's free of what's gone before. Not to downplay Morrison's run at all, but it's nice to see, as you said, something fun and different. And some nice, interesting changes for the patrol ahead.
Yeah, and there's a real playfulness to the writing.
Mm.
Like it's a bit self-aware, but cheeky and fun.
Yeah, yeah. I still can't believe I didn't get the gorgeous writer shtick.
Cognitive recognition's probably not your best suit at the moment.
At the moment, yes, that's very kind of you, sir. Oh, kill me. All yeah, right. I really like these two issues. Again, when I first read these years back, this was my first introduction to the Patrol, and I love these opening stories from Rachel Pollack. Still do. I still think they're really good fun.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Yeah.
All righty. Doomsplained.
I think so, yes.
Nice.
The end of the world is approaching. Soon the planet will be engulfed in a nuclear Armageddon. And the only people that can prevent this from happening are considered to be the greatest villains of all time. The only thing standing in their way is the Justice League. In 2005,
Wait a second. Are we sure about that date this time?
Yeah, it's 2005. We're sure this time.
Let's just be perfectly clear. I hate all of you so much.
Okay, good. Got that. All right.
In 2005, DC Comics began publishing a 12-issue bi-monthly comic called Justice. Written by Jim Kruger with art by Alex Ross and Doug Braithwaite, this series was essentially a Super Friends for adults. And now another group of super friends has come together to discuss all 12 issues in a podcasting crossover called JL May 2017. The excitement begins on the April 30th episode of the Fire and Water podcast and continues into Supermates, the Idlehead of Diabolu podcast, Views from the Long Box, the Pulp to Pixel podcast, the Lantern cast, the Shazam cast, Comic Reflections, The Silver and Gold Podcast, The Power of Fishnets, Waiting for Doom, and Justice's First Dawn, J.L. May 2017. Last year, they covered the beginning of the Justice League. This year, they discuss and review the League's toughest battle. The coverage begins on April 30th on the Fire and Water Podcast, located at Fire and Water Podcast.
.com. And so now it's time to open up the mailbag of doom and have a look at the question of the week, which last time we asked you, who is your favorite fictional cop? And first off, we heard from Jared Driscoll over on the Facebook page, and he said, my pick would be Tubbs from Miami Vice, only because Crockett, otherwise known as Don Johnson, seemed to overshadow him on the show.
He sure did. We heard from Chris at BTO and Batbooks on Twitter, and he said, Arthur Dietrich, Frank Farrillo, Giuseppe Petri, played by Andy Garcia, Steve McGarrett, Jack Lord, and played by Jack Lord, and Joe Friday, but I'll go with Dick Tracy. So he's hitting the movies and the TV shows there. Yeah. Andy Garcia from The Untouchables, I'm guessing.
I will join you in that guess, yes. we then heard from Moby One at Shmoby One, and he said Renee Montoya, then in brackets, The Question.
Oh, yeah, good choice.
Was she still a cop when she was The Question?
I think she was sort of out of the police by then.
Okay.
In disgrace, or she had issues after her partner died. Alan Middleton chimed in with The Question is a good answer. And then Wilfred chimed in with, as is Dan Turpin and Dr. Wells. A nice little callback there.
Thank you, Wilfred.
But Moby One, he followed up with, I can't believe I forgot about Barry Allen. So Barry would be answer number one for me, with Renee number two.
Ooh, okay. Still a good duo. So good. We then heard from at Fractures, Fracknarok, still on the Twitters. He limited himself to one answer this time. Goodness. And he said Judge Dredd.
Yes, and Karthik Karkarella, he was able to jump in there and say, I have to say Judge Dredd here too.
Yeah. I would have been disappointed if Karthik had said anyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. We then heard from Will Fish at Will Fish on Twitters, and he said Mulder and Scully. But then he gave honorable mentions to John McClane, Will Graham from Hannibal, Rust Cole from True Detective, Columbo, Axel Foley from Beverly Hills Cop, and Vincent Hanna from Heat. Oh, and then he had comics choices as well. Jim Gordon, Gene DeWolf, and loosely defined, Tara Chase and Henry Lime.
Oh. That's a lot of answers. You're jumping in on the multiple answers thing there, Will.
Will's gone all frack on us.
Yeah. We heard from Alan Middleton, and he chimed in with his daughter's picks, Emily. She said, Columbo, 100%.
Okay, cool. Bob Gartner-Ellis said Space Cop. He chose Vril Dox, but Earth Cop, Joe Dredd.
Nice choices.
Mm.
We heard from Martin Gray, and he said, gee, Officer Krupke. Who's Officer Krupke, Mike?
I believe the YouTube link he sent us was from a performance of West Side Story.
Oh.
So it must be the cop in that.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure Martin will clarify it for us. Yes. Hope so. We then heard from Rifty at Rift1821, and he said, me! I'm the coolest cop in every fictional story I have ever appeared in.
I went driving with Rift the other day, so I was driving, he was passenger, and I did a U-turn. He's going, what are you doing? And I said, I'm doing a U-turn. He said, you're not allowed to do a U-turn. And I was like, I've got you on board. Isn't it like God mode if you have a cop on board? But apparently it wasn't.
Just to clarify for those listeners who aren't aware, yes, Rifty is a police officer in real life. Yes.
And fictional life, according to him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My greatest Rifty adventure. It's all about the fantastical cop, you know.
Oh, dear. We heard from Ostrakus one, Leave It to Mutech Rink, and he said, Lenny Briscoe. He said it several times.
Yes.
That's from Law and Order.
Ah, okay, right. Thank you for answering that question. Yeah.
No.
Right. Nicholas at Nick RDE said, Dangerous Davies from The Last Detective.
I'm unfamiliar with The Last Detective.
Yeah, same here. I should have researched it beforehand. But I'm sick. But I sound sexy, so yeah. I'm excused. Yeah.
Research be damned.
Yes.
We heard from Craig101 at Craig R. McD, and he said, John McClane from Die Hard or Martin Riggs from Lethal Weapon. If we're talking comics, then it has to be Jim Gordon.
Mm.
Oh, Riggs. He was He was always what? Just a loose end.
Yeah, he was trouble, that boy. I tell you.
Yeah.
Did you know they've done a Lethal Weapon TV series?
Well, I had heard that.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of it very late at night on TV, and I know why they've played it late, very late at night on TV, because it's bad.
Oh, dear.
It's not very good. Anyway, Relatively Geeky at Relatively_Geeky said, Inspector Lestrade from Sherlock Holmes.
That's cool. Professor Allen again.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Everyone's taken Frack's
thing. Attack. Yeah. We heard from Abel Padzilla, and he said, favorite cop, Chief Martin Brody from Jaws. Nobody else I'd rather have keeping my family safe. Oh, good call. Yeah.
That's a nice one, yeah. D, or at Dinosaur Number One on Twitter, said his top five, or sorry, their top five was Murray the Cop, Judge Dredd, Castellan Spandrel, Columbo, and Chief Wiggum.
Okay, so Castellan Spandrel, that's from Doctor Who.
Okay.
Columbo, Chief Wiggum, yep, Simpsons, and Columbo. Judge Dredd, I don't know who Murray the Cop is.
No, nor do I.
Interesting. We heard from House of Gun at House of Gun, and he said, I don't know if I can narrow it down, but one of the first to come to mind is Detective Gorin from Law and Order Criminal Intent.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good choice. We then heard from Clinton at the Coffee and Comics blog, who's at Coffee and Comics blog. He said, top five, Robocop, Lady Cop, Deputy Barney Fife, Detective Columbo, and Commissioner Gordon.
Oh, Commissioner Gordon gets a lot of love.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Big Jim, yeah.
All right. Mike, what about you?
I'm going to be boring and go with Commissioner Jim Gordon.
Ah, nice.
Not boring, but it's a good choice. I mean, yeah. he's you know, he's seen it all on the mean streets of Gotham. He's worked his way up the ranks to keep the city safe. And what do you know? He's allies with Batman. And you know, he helped. You know, he's the father of Barbara Gordon, who becomes Batgirl. So you know, he's tied to the legacy without even realizing it. You know, it's cool. What about you, Paul?
Well, I'm joining many others, and I have to say Judge Dredd.
Okay, that's cool.
Yep. But we did hear from Dr. Ange in an email, and so we'll go straight to his answers. So he said, comics, Lady Cop, so poetic in her description of STDs, and he included a panel of her describing VD, which was good. We heard television, Andy Griffith, he ruled Maybury with a common sense and kindness, didn't even carry a gun. That's the American thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. And movies, Robocop, the original.
Oh, always the original. Yeah.
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 Nice. And as for the rest of his email, he said, I'm in the group of people who simply pretend the Pollock run didn't happen. I got the first handful of these issues and realized she was going to try real hard to emulate Morrison, but you can't be Morrison, and a pale copy isn't going to be worth reading. It is always tough to follow a creator who has had a truly signature run on a character. Veitch after Moore on Swamp Thing, Pollock after Morrison on Doom Patrol, Tom DeFalco after Walt Simonson on Thor, you are doomed for failure. Nothing against these runs in general, but you can't help but compare them to the runs which preceded, and they will always be found wanting. Instead, I think that the comic should be cancelled and then rebooted maybe a year later. Give the readers some time to distance themselves from the prior superior stories. All that said, I am eager to listen to you guys cover these issues, since maybe with the passage of time, I might give them a less jaundiced view. In this issue, I was wondering if the team would recruit some of the autoerotic ghosts. After all, the team is short of a member called Hot Hands, and I suppose these spirits fit the bill. Thanks, as always, Ange.
Thank you, Ange. And yes, we also got an email from Dean Jones, and he said, hi, Mike and Paul. I had to correct this from Mike and Paul. Okay. In the most recent episode, you speculated on Eros in the Autos as a title. I agree with your interpretation of autos being connected to autoerotic, but if we translate the Greek roots literally, we get something along the lines of sexuality in the self as a title.
Ah, Eros.
Okay.
Very good.
Dean continues on, the story is very much a Dorothy story, and she's going through puberty and becoming Dorothy the Eight-Faced Woman. We see at the start of Sliding in the Wreckage that she's shopping for tampons. The imaginary friend that we see most frequently in this story is Pretty Miss Dot, who's very much an idealized version of Dorothy and even has the same name. I think someone pointed this out a couple of episodes ago. I think one of us mentioned it. Of course, this is all nonsense because the title of 67 is actually E. Rose in the Autos. And also, I was totally wrong about Jane's Cult in Volume 6. Yes, Dean also theorized that Jane was going to be Lucius's mother.
Ah.
With all the connected personalities and that. It was an interesting theory, but no, it didn't quite pan out. But hey, that, you know, he's not the only one to have a theory about Volume 6 go awry. Says the man who thought that Lodestone was going to be Casey's mum. So, you know.
Oh, dear. It's fun to speculate, though, isn't it?
It is. It is. But thanks, everyone, for their responses and their emails this week.
Awesome. So that's it for this week's show, but we will be back next week, and we will be doing our part of JL May, which is sort of an annual crossover now, where between several podcasts they cover something that's too big for one podcast to do on its own, and that's the Justice series, which was done by Jim Kruger, Dougie Braithwaite, and Alex Ross. Mm. It's a nice painted art by Alex Ross. So if you want to hear earlier parts of this, you can search around. You can use the JL May hashtag, and you can find the earlier shows. But part one was covered in the Fire and Water podcast. Part two was the Supermates podcast. Part three was in the Idle Head of Diabolu podcast, which is the Martian Manhunter podcast, which has got a difficult name, but you know, that's Frank all over, isn't it?
Yeah.
Part four is in Views from the Long Box, which is Michael Bailey's. We have Pulp to Pixel podcast for part five. The Lantern Cast just did part six, and I think released the day we record this is the Shazam Cast doing part seven. So we are doing part 11, so by the time our ep comes out, there'll be 10 parts out before that. So that's exciting. And the whole thing wraps up with part 12, which is Justice's First Dawn.
Yeah.
All righty, so that's coming up. And to celebrate that, we're going to have a question of the week related to the Justice League, which is, what is your fave Justice League story?
Oh, that's such a difficult one.
Batman vs. Superman or...
Yeah, there's so many good. I know. The Tenth Circle.
Crucifer.
He's such a badass. Oh, sorry. No, that will not be my answer.
Anyway, if you want to let us know what your answer is, you can go to WFDpod on Twitter, talk to Wilfred. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We've got the Facebook page, and there's also mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, which is where a cover gallery and pictures from these issues will go up when Doug gets around to it. So, but Doug's doing such a fabulous job, isn't he?
He is. It's a great site. Go and check it out. Leave some comments. Let us know how we're doing, and let Doug know how he's doing.
Yeah, and he's doing good. Our
love and respect or something.
Awesome. Anyway, that's all for this one. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for soldiering on.
I'll go and die now. In a sexy way.
Well done.
Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Bye.